joins us. Colin, good afternoon.
How are you, our dog? Arf, arf. Apologies for the jocosity. I am lit up today like the proverbial Christmas tree in spring because of the tipple. Now, I'm only teasing. I'm on the hibiscus tea, but we're talking alcohol.
We are talking alcohol, libations, and several different takes on it today. And let's begin with some whiskeys that New England folks ought to consider trying if they haven't already.
As you know, I walk an awful a lot of miles. And when you're on the side of the road all the time, you notice one whiskey bottle. It is almost always this one whiskey bottle that has been thrown out someone's car window. And that is Fireball.
Oh, yeah.
Let's start with the public service announcement. If you are over a certain age, and I'm sorry if I offend some of you, you should not be drinking the Fireball. The only Fireball in your life should be the Reindeer with the suggestive name from the Rankin-Bass Rudolph special and the Deep Purple album.
So, that's good advice.
Being from New England, we're coastal people, and a lot of times people think, oh, you know, that Dewar's, that looks pretty good. It's a blend. We want something that kind of replicates the aquatic quality of where we live, the terroir of the environment, the brine, the peatiness of our forests. And for that, you want to be going to the Islay region of Scotland and for whiskeys like Laphroaig and Ardbeg and Lagavulin, and they have this high phenolic aspect to them. They're very smoky. They're peaty. You don't water them down. You nose them, and you smell something of the sea. You smell something of the place that we live in. When you're in the forest in a crisp morning, right, and it's cool out, you can still see your breath a little bit in spring, and it's whiskey that kind of encapsulates all of that, and you have a dram of it. You have an ounce, and it's just wonderful. Maybe you read, and you sit there, and it's just a little portion of heaven.
Don Cookson, can you confirm this?
For me, a whiskey and reading have never been terribly close companions. Just doesn't seem
to work.
That's
because you're not
me.
Just having a dram. That may be something
maybe
to
that,
do with
that. That may have something to do with it.
Well, we have different size glasses for different size pursuits in this life, right? So it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of deal, necessarily.
Absolutely. We also want to talk about some works of art that, celebrate might be the wrong word, but certainly discuss the experience and the use of alcohol. And let's start with a terrific novel, J.P. Dunleavy's The Ginger Man, which is just one of the most interesting reads of all time, the story of American in Dublin, Sebastian Dangerfield, and his adventures and often misadventures.
His misadventures is the charitable way of putting it. When you are, for instance, on the train, and, well, we've all been there, right? And you accidentally expose yourself to people, or your, like, infant is crying, and you're kind of annoyed, but you're attempting to do things the right way in silence, and you think, like, a pillow, just a little bit of pillow, is not going to be that bad over the head. It'll work out fine. The child doesn't die in the novel. But yes, it is a body novel of a, we don't hear this term very much anymore, but a rake hell. Like Lord Rochester, Earl of Rochester, Lord Wilmot, he was a rake hell in the classic sense. And this is an American let loose in Ireland with his family, as a mistress, all kinds of mistress problems. I think that's probably what happens, though, when you have a mistress. It's probably just not, like, very smooth all along the road. And it was, Dunleavy couldn't get it published. And, of course, there's so much drinking in it in, like, a sort of happy way. It's not a Lost Weekend kind of way. And it ended up at this tiny press. And Dunleavy gets the book in the mail. He's like, cool, it's my first novel. Let's see this bad boy. And he realizes that it only came out under the Traveler's Companion series, which was the pornography series. They call it the Traveler's Companion because you're on the road, right? You're riding the rails, and you want to tuck into some body prose, and this was kind of the book for that. The first reader of it, if that tells you anything, was another rake hell, Brendan Behan. So like, if you read a book and the first dude you turn to is Brendan Behan, it's probably not very staid. Maybe your mom wouldn't enjoy it. You should keep it away from her. But it makes you feel like you want to go out and have a drink and sing some songs in the pub with your friends and watch some football and really get you know, drink life to the lees, in the phrase of Homer.
Well, and was there, with this and the film we're going to talk about as well, in that post-war era, there was certainly a romanticization of drinking, a glamour, and even when it got ugly, there was still a glamour attached to it that we would not assign to it today.
Sure. Well, the film we're talking about is Saturday Night and Sunday Morning, and it's just a few years after the Dunleavy novel, which came out in 1955. It's not like anyone knew it in 1960 when this film comes out. And it was part of the realist British kitchen sink movement. And I love those films. Probably if you have kids of a certain age, like middle school, high school, maybe you've seen them in a production of A Taste of Honey or go to like a, you know, sort of community repertory theater. That is in this sort of movement, and it's about a guy who's sort of like an angrier version of a rake hell, Arthur, played by Albert Finney. And Albert Finney is really good in this film, and if you're an Arctic Monkeys fan and you like their first album, Whatever People Say I Am, I'm Not, that is taken from this particular film. And there are a lot of scenes in bars. What Arthur gets up to is, again, we kind of have like a mistress theme going today, which I guess someone might read into with my own life. But and he has this mistress. He's having an affair with a woman who's married, and he has a girlfriend.
And a much older woman, as I recall, right?
Much older, right, right. And he gets her pregnant, though, so she's not like that old. And there's this scene where he's chased through a carnival, basically, that's closed, and he ends up on a ride, and the people, the husband, friends of the husband, are coming to give him the thrashing of his lifetime, and he has to wait for the ride to stop to get off. And it's just like, you're watching, like, well, this isn't the fun side of drinking now, is it? So, you get a little bit of a cautionary tale, too, but a lot of it's in bars, and it has that kind of Bonhomius, good-spirited kind of, yeah, I can do one more pint, the parting glass, like that Pogue song. It's sort of like the cinematic version of the parting glass.
And it kind of set the tone for Albert Finney over the next few years, including his the rakishness that he exhibited when he won the Academy Award as Tom Jones.
Tom Jones is very much a rake hell kind of film. And Tom Jones, the book, I remember, like, if you've ever read Samuel Richardson's Clarissa, it's kind of like this sick house, letters-based novel, and you feel confined, like you're in this sort of like TB ward almost. And then you read Tom Jones by Fielding, and this is true of the film too, and it's like escaping into a giant, verdant, right, outdoors. And yeah, and he's a different character in that, but he very much got into kind of a niche for a while, right, in the 60s especially. And, yeah, you see that sort of the tipple, the libation, all of that flowing through the spirit, but the good spirit. It's like when people are drunks, they're like mean drunks and happy drunks. This would be the happier side. Like John Lennon was a really mean and violent drunk. This would be like the more large-hearted sort of side of that.
All right, and how do libations make their way into Brahms' Festival Overture?
Well, Brahms, who you might not think is like a cheery kind of guy, was given an award by a university, and he gets this letter in the mail, and they say to him, like, look, you know, we're giving you this honorary doctorate. You should count yourself lucky. We would like, sir, a symphony. And Brahms is looking at this and is like, you're not getting a symphony. Are you out of your mind? I'm not writing you like a symphony because you bestow this meaningless degree upon me, but I will do something. So what he does is he takes all of these student drinking songs, like these kind of songs of really hearty carousing, and he writes the Academic Festival Overture. But it's really clever because it had to have an academic component to it. So as he's basically saying, like, you should drink until you vomit, he's doing these really complicated things with counterpoint, but he's not done. He shows up to get his, like, award, right? It's all staid, and all these people are sitting around, and he's like, no. I'll walk the orchestra through it. So he goes up and he conducts it, and it's just this, like, bacchanal. It's this insanity among these, like, milquetoast professors. And he's like, yeah, there's your symphony. I'm done. Going to the bar, whoever wants to join me. So it's about 10.5 minutes long. You can listen to it certainly on YouTube. If you confine yourself to only drinking during its duration, you should be fine the next morning. And it's just this it's actually really sophisticated. The counterpoint, the things he's doing with melody, it's not like, oh, I'm just going to do a carousing tune. It's really kind of like big boy classical music writing.
All right, we've talked for 10 minutes with Colin Fleming about libations, but the reality is that you recently celebrated an anniversary, 2 years without taking a drink.
I did, and I've also had 2 years, as I sit here at 730 days, of a vast dossier of weird remarks, puzzling assumptions, frightening epiphanies from people. Dates will say, well, we could go to AA and have our date there. It's like, really, that's what we're doing. One person said to me, I am also a sober cobra. Like, you know what? That's a term, because that doesn't seem to me at all fair to cobras. It implies that there's like this woozy, natty light haze version of a cobra who's like, yeah, I'm just chilling, dude. Whereas a cobra is more like, behold my transfixing gaze. Yes, you see that I'm very serious as I stare at you. It's only going to take me a fraction of a second to lunge and end you. Cobra, focus. I feel like that was a bad term on her part. A surgeon from Charles MGH, right? This, I'm scared of doctors, and I am actually on the hibiscus tea and the cranberry juice and the low-fat milk for my blood pressure. And this surgeon says to me, well, I can't go out with you because you don't drink. I said, no, I go to bars all the time. I'm like watching the Bruins. I get very upset. Didn't work out the way I predicted it was going to work out these playoffs. And she said, well, no, but you can't get wrecked with me. I'm like, you're a surgeon in the morning. I've played Operation when I've had like a Pepsi, and it doesn't go as well post-Pepsi. I don't really want to be doing this with you. And then because I go to the bars and I get the cranberry juice, which if you have high blood pressure, it lowers it, I realize that everyone thought basically at bars that I was Lord Urinary Tract Infection. So now I have to make a little announcement saying that I'm not. I'm all good down there, and it's simply for my BP. And that doesn't really get the ladies to love you either, to be honest with you. But I'm on that. I'm on the thistle. That's another thing you take. It's what Eeyore would eat. He'd actually eat the thorns, and it was because he was always down, and he drank. So if you drank formally, and you are worried about your liver, get yourself some thistle in capsule form. So it's not the thorns, and you are good to go. You're good to watch a great film, listen to a little Brahms, have yourself a body novel, and you won't be hungover in the morning.
And if you tell the ladies you're just having a little thistle, I imagine that's a bit of an aphrodisiac.
Well, to be honest with you, I am on so many liquids for my various homeopathic remedies that when I am doing that aforesaid walking around Boston early in the morning, I am well logged, sir. You can hear me coming if there was anyone out sloshing, and I have had to be doing some things near the frog pond that if I did them slightly later in the day, and I'm already worried about video cameras as it is, so I pull my hood up, I would be on some kind of offender list. But what am I supposed to do? Coat myself? I'm not going to coat myself.
No, no.
That's undignified. I'm only coating myself if I have to, like if I were a snake and I was apprehended. That's what they do. But not, that's right, a cobra. A cobra is above it. They just strike. So, be a cobra.
It all comes back around. Colin Fleming every Tuesday on Downtown. Thank you, Colin.
All right, thank you.
It is 5:18 here on a Tuesday afternoon.